Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Good morning, good evening, wherever you're tuning in from. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We've got another wonderful show in store for you with a truly magnificent guest. I can't wait to bring him on. But first, of course, we have my blog post from a couple of years ago. Just kind of taking these in order, and I have a feeling this one's rather apropos for who we are bringing on today. So let's get started. This blog post is entitled, Healing Finds Us When We Least Expect It. Our healing path to wholeness is not linear. We can feel like we never get anywhere. The mind can keep bringing us back to the same issues. Relief seems impossible to achieve. We work so hard at trying to be better. To just feel like it is okay to just live in our own skin. Yet we can still ruminate on all the things we don't feel good about how we don't take care of ourselves, or how we never treat ourselves as well as we treat other people. We look for someone who will just take away our pain, someone who can show us how we can get out of the tangled knot that we feel inside our chest. After dealing with these feelings for so long, we just want to give up, to end our misery any way possible. While the mind can be a great ally, it can also keep us stuck. For no one else can ever take away our own pain. It is ours to work through and to process. Our pain is what builds our emotional muscles. Working through it is what gives us strength and builds our confidence. It is the resistance that we push against that brings us to a new place, a place of knowing that we can deal with difficult things, that we can survive even the most painful moments. And that our trauma does not always have to define us. The relief we seek is just the other side of our pain, out beyond our fear and our disappointment. Only our expectations make it so hard to achieve, for we expect it to go the way we think we want it to go. Not the way it has to go for us to truly find the joy we seek. It can feel like we are working on ourselves for years without seeing a result. Yet every step on the healing journey is building upon the previous step. Every single opportunity that we take to dig in a little deeper takes us to a whole new level of understanding and feeling. Until one day, when we least expect it, we do have the breakthrough we have been hoping for. We finally feel our way through the most painful feelings and find our way to peace. Maybe even joy. For healing finds us just when we think we will never find it. And suddenly, in the blink of an eye, it all feels worth it. The long nights, the dreaded days, they all lead us to where we are now. In this place of wholeness and acceptance, just when we needed to be there. So I wrote this blog post after working with a number of clients who kind of all said similar things like, oh, I just want it to be over. Oh, I just want to feel better. And The tricky part is that the kind of life in the universe doesn't work on our schedule. It doesn't really go when exactly we want things to happen. Not that it doesn't happen. Not that, the heat, we don't find a way to feeling better. In my experience, rarely does it happen when we expect. And usually it's when we drop those expectations that that's when it comes through. That when we keep saying to ourselves, oh, this is the workshop that's going to do it, that's going to make me feel better. Oh, that this is the ceremony, that this is the healing that I need. When we place so much emphasis on the thing we're doing in the moment, that almost creates a little resistance to getting where we actually want to go. But what we often don't realize is every one of those healing sessions, every one of those ceremonies, every one of those meditations, every one of those workshops and boot camps and retreats, they're all watering the soil. They're all adding fertilizer to the seeds we've been planting for so long. And that one day, usually when we least expect it, those seeds will sprout. And that resistance that we've been feeling so long and not feeling good, it's the resistance like the stem has of pushing through the soil that builds the strength so that when it pops up out of the ground, it can stand tall. When we look to somebody else to take away our pain, if they actually do take away our pain, then we give our power away to them because they, quote unquote, fixed us. But when we own our healing, when we are the ones putting in the work, when we're the ones showing up day after day after day, feeling like we're barely budging an inch on our healing path, then when we do step over that line and we do find our healing, we know we're the ones who got us there. And then we can take just a little bit of pride in that work. And then if some great challenge comes to us in the future, we know we can withstand it because of all we've been through before. It's an old kind of cliche of that which doesn't kill us makes us stronger. Well, that resistance which we continually push against builds our muscles, builds our internal, emotional, personal muscles that help us to feel stronger, that help us to feel like, oh, if I can get my way through that, then I can get my way through anything. And the irony is, sometimes when we've made a huge breakthrough, and we're feeling so much better about ourselves, and we're feeling more confident, more settled, more centered. Sometimes that's when the most challenging and the most difficult times of life comes through. And we can say that, oh, thank God I got through it, so I was able to deal with this. Or we can say, oh my God, I can't believe I've got another thing to deal with. But I like to think that that's the beauty of life's timing for us. that it almost as if the universe knows that we've got these challenges waiting for us. And so our healing needs to come just in time for us to be okay, so that then we can deal with this even more challenging episode in our lives. So that is my blog post. It is entitled, Healing Finds Us When We Least Expect It. And of course, you can always find my blog on my personally branded website, theconsciousconsultant.com, and on the station's website at talkradio.nyc/blog. And now, it is my extreme pleasure to welcome back to the show internationally acclaimed writer, poet, and mystical teacher, Andrew Harvey, author of more than 40 books, including Son of Man, The Hope, Love is Everything, Turn Me to Gold, and Radical Regeneration with Carolyn Baker. Andrew is also the founder of the Institute for Sacred Activism, an organization devoted to inviting concerned people to meet our global crises as inspired, effective, and practical agents of institutional and systematic change. He returns to my show with his powerful new book, The Magdalene Revolution. In this new book, Andrew offers a radically fresh reading of Mary Magdalene, drawing on decades of scholarship in sacred texts, the Gnostic Gospels, and the mystical traditions. He examines how she has been portrayed in the New Testament, sometimes splendidly and sometimes dangerously distorted, and recovers the truths revealed about her in works such as The Gospel of Mary. Welcome to The Conscious Consultant, Andrew. Welcome back, I should say.
Oh, Sam, how lovely to be with you, and how absolutely lovely to hear your wonderful and very profound meditation on healing. And as you were speaking, I was reminded about something that I was told years ago by a great Hindu teacher that I loved. And she said, the most powerful of all spiritual techniques is saying the name of God in the heart. And you may do it passionately for a long time and feel nothing is happening. But imagine that you're in a cell, the cell of your enclosed ego, and you're given a file, and that file is the practice of the name of God. And that very stark wall that is separating you, you don't know how thick it is, from the open field of vision is out there. So you just keep filing away whatever happens. And one day, which you won't have any timing over, any control over, you'll be out in the open field of unity. And that has always stuck with me as the most wonderful remark on spiritual practice. But the same is also true of healing. And my book, The Magdalene Revolution, is dedicated to what I believe to be the most important healing on every level that we need, a healing that can only come back to us through the return in the full force and majesty and beauty and power of the sacred feminine in union with the sacred masculine. And that is the healing on multiple levels that our world needs, if it's not going to be catastrophically destroyed by a demented masculine out of total control and totally dissociated from its feminine.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's the main passion behind writing this, which is a revolutionary book, as you know, because it totally redefines Christ consciousness.
So, was the inspiration for this book seeing sort of how the damaged or the traumatized masculine is out of control, or was there something more that sort of put you on the path of writing this book?
Oh, thank you for asking. But actually, it was a wild life-changing, totally deranging vision, because 20-odd years ago, I took a group of seekers down to the south of France, to Magdalen territory, and it was a very alive group, and we went into the cave where she's said to have spent the last 30 years of her life in silent contemplation. It's a cave on a mountain called Saint-Baume, and it's vast and beautiful. And when I entered the cave, I felt this tremendous glowing peace. And then I stood outside the cave and read what the Catholic Church had written about what she was up to in the cave. And according to them, she was up to being massively penitent for her wild life and longing for death and all of that. And I started to scream inside. I thought, my God, how could you say this of the woman that had seen him resurrected? How could you say this of the woman who had witnessed the greatest miracle in human history? How could you say this of someone who had been called Apostle of the Apostles? And I started to walk down the valley feeling very boiling with outrage. And I turned to look one last time at the cave. And there she was, as an immense tower of blazing golden light. Unmistakably a woman, but also unmistakably the full presence of the divine motherhood of God, the divine feminine. And I cannot begin to describe what that did to me, because it really deranged me for 20 years. I didn't know what to do with it. And I was doing so much else that I was beginning secret activism. I was writing a series of books that were very important to me. And I didn't feel ready to confront the full revolutionary power of what she had revealed herself to be, nothing less than a co-incarnation, a co-creator, a co-consort of Jesus, and someone absolutely essential as the incarnation of the divine feminine to the sacred marriage of masculine and feminine at the highest, deepest, richest levels that it is authentic Christ consciousness. Because in order to be able to convey something like that so directly, so nakedly, so brilliantly, as she had conveyed it to me, I had to go on a huge inner journey that involved three things. It involved massive reading of sacred texts throughout the entire Christian tradition to find those beings who had had a similar intuition. It took a deep, deep immersion in the sacred feminine in all traditions, because in order to understand what has been lost and forgotten and degraded and abandoned, you have to go on a profound search, which I did, into Hinduism and Buddhism and Kashmiri Shaivism and God knows what else. And it took a real journey into my own sexual emotional experience, because how could I begin to understand what the sacred marriage makes possible for us if I didn't examine what had been lost in my own, sometimes tragic and sometimes very painful experience through the kind of institutionalized body hatred and sex hatred that the religions divorced from the sacred feminine had created. So I wasn't really ready to write the book until my late 60s. And then I went through three absolutely outrageously painful, difficult years in which every time I tried to write the book, I could write a little bit of it and then was silenced because I couldn't go any further. And then was guided directly by books arriving through the post or sudden dreams by her. And at which time I realized that this wasn't my book. This was what I'd lived to write, but that she had taken increasingly control of my whole being and was guiding me if I was prepared to go through what nearly killed me, but also rebirthed me. So that's the short version of what actually happened. It's not a book, truly. It's a sacred text. I know that she guided me throughout it all. It's grounded in history. It's grounded in sacred texts. It's grounded in the Gnostic text. It's grounded in the Gospel of Mary. It's grounded in the great gospel that was revealed to us in 2010 and 2015 when our own gospel, the Gospel of the Beloved Companion, was translated and published. But it is something that goes further than any of them because it's directly relevant to what we're going through in the world now, an apocalyptic evolutionary crisis, which I believe can only be healed by the coming together of the very best of the sacred masculine and the very richest and deepest and wildest and purest and most flesh-blessing, most world-blessing sides of the divine feminine.
I can see from your passion that this vision really struck you to your core. Now you've been a seeker most of your life. You've studied amazing things. Have you ever had any other experience that even came close to this, or was this something that was just truly unique? So it really pointed you in this direction in a very profound way.
A beautiful question. You know, I've been a finder for 40 years, not so much a seeker. But the finding has expanded and expanded and expanded. So my life has been blessed by amazing encounters with great mystics. I'd spent 40 years with Rumi. I've spent the last 15 years with Kabir, translating Kabir. I've been through the dark night process and see directly the divine light. But what was left for me to wrangle with was something at the core of my own being. And that was, what is my true relationship to the body? What is my true relationship to sexuality? All those other findings had opened me to divine reality, but I was still stuck at some level in my human pain, in my human trauma, in the agony that I've experienced as a gay man with multiple failed attempts to find the beloved that I so long for in reality. And so this healing, this finding, that came through this vision of an amazing, utterly devoted, utterly beautiful, utterly sacred, utterly sensual, and utterly transcendent relationship between Jesus and Mary and between inside us, the sacred Jesus and the sacred Mary Magdalene, our own masculine and feminine, was something that began to heal me at a level that none of the other revelations I've been given had, because it healed Andrew. It healed the person who had been through so much suffering in his emotional sexual life. So that's why I'm so grateful and so overwhelmed by the experience, because it really did begin to finish the last part of my journey so that I feel ready to give far more than I've ever given at the moment that I find myself, which is wonderful at 74, because usually that's the time where you're packing up and doddering around the garden. But I feel that the experience of writing the Magdalene Revolution has birthed me into a wholly new wholeness, exactly as you describe, and that this is the moment when I can actually give the most. That's why I'm speaking to you from Kashmir, because I'm now living in Kashmir, which is the living, explosive, tender representation in its landscapes, in its beauty, in its traditions of this fullness that I'm feeling at this moment.
Beautiful, beautiful. We just have a few minutes before we take a little break, but I just want to ask you, in the beginning of your book, you dedicated to your cat, who unfortunately passed away.
It's the last part, actually. It's the epigraph. I dedicated the book to Maria Callas, but the last part of the book is the epigraph to my cat, because I wanted that to be the last. I wanted her to be the last memory of the book, because I experienced so much of the tenderness of the tantric relationship in my relationship with my cat. Obviously, it wasn't sexual, but it was totally embodied and radiant and tender and unbelievably loving. She was far more than a cat to me. She was a great teacher of radiant embodiment, and I adored her for 17 and a half years with all of my heart. And then tragically, she died in the fire that destroyed one life, May the 2nd last year, when my condo burnt down, all my unpublished manuscripts, all my books, all my records, all my treasures, but my greatest treasure, which was her, were destroyed. Fortunately, she wasn't burnt. She just inhaled the smoke, but it was a total crucifixion of the heart. But the amazing thing is that it came when I was finishing the book, and it came in the most astounding way, because I just plucked up my courage to write the preface in which I said what I really believe. Finally, I kicked away the chair and said, "Well, I might as well be hung for a sheep as for a lamb. So let me say what I really believe, which is that this is the time of the Pentecost, the return in full glory of Mary Magdalene to complete our vision of Christ consciousness. And that she's coming back in flames, and our job is to become one of the singing flames of her Pentecostal resurrection." And I wrote that. And then I went out to have breakfast, and I came back, and my entire world was burning in those flames. It was so shattering and so precise. And then I knelt down in the rain, and I begged God not take my cat, not to destroy everything else, but not to destroy her. And of course, at that moment, a little man came out and said, "Your beloved cat is dead." And I walked up the stairs, I walked into the appalling madness of the condo that had just been, the flames had been doused. I looked at her body, and at that moment, something which I can't really describe, but which has been an overwhelming experience, continues to be, happened. One part of me just screamed and died from the intensity of the pain. But at the same moment, a great light came into me, and I felt totally ecstatic, blissful beyond anything that I'd ever felt. And that feeling, that experience has lasted. So it was to me a revelation of the truth of what I'd written. She'd given me the ultimate experience as a reward, the experience that she'd had through the crucifixion and the resurrection in terms of my own life. And in terms of what the world is going to go through, the world will go through that experience. But it won't be the end. It is about to go through some of the most severest, most terrible, most excruciating challenges. They will come later this year, but they will not be the end. They will be the beginning of the beginning, because they'll wake humanity up in a way that it has never been woken up to the danger that we now are in through our imbalance of really not only destroying ourselves, but a great deal of nature. I think this is one of Trump's great gifts to us in the most terrifying way. But the war that we're now insanely pursuing in the Middle East is not going to end well. It's going to explode in ways that will look terrifying and be terrifying, but not the end. A new birth is coming, but it's coming through a great death. And I've lived it, so I'm here to help.
Beautiful, beautiful. I mean, I just can't imagine like coming home and like losing everything that of your whole life, especially for someone like yourself who's so prolific of writing and creating and having been a finder for so many years, I'm sure you had such amazing things that you that held very dear, especially your
I did, but they weren't as amazing as the light that descended and proved that everything that I'd been thinking about working for was real, because I'd been working for years on the core theme of the Magdalene Revolution, which is that it's possible as a human being to be transfigured. It's possible to be transfigured in mind, in heart, in soul, but also in body, in the very depths of the cellular structure, the bones and the muscles of the body. This has been known in Christianity, in deep esoteric Christianity. It's called theosis in the Orthodox tradition. But what I'd uncovered in the Magdalene Revolution through my own inmost experience and through her grace is that there's another transfiguration stream, and that is through the deep tantric passion of two people dedicated to God. And that was what was missing in Christian mysticism. The other stream is an ascetic stream. It's very crucial. It's very important. But this stream is available to all human beings. And it's, the destruction of that stream prevented the full birth of what Jesus and Mary came to birth. So knowing that was real absolutely validated everything that I'd lived. And what did it matter if four unpublished books got burned? What did it matter if I lost a whole lifetime's treasures? What did it matter even if I lost my beloved, because I couldn't lose her, she'll always be with me. And what was given to me in exchange for this was something that I had imagined intellectually, I'd experienced a little in the heart, but I hadn't begun to imagine living consciously in the cells of body. So you come to a place, I'm sure you've been to it yourself, Sam, when you face an ordeal which nearly wipes you out and then rewards you with a realization that goes beyond words, that is so much vaster than any of the healing that you imagine. Because we imagine healing in terms of the consciousness that we're in now. And very often we go through tremendous suffering and disappointment and darkness and think there'll never be healing. And then the healing happens and we realize that we could not have begun to imagine the blessing, the grace, the unbelievable bliss of the healing that God had prepared for us through what we felt was persistent failure and abandonment and betrayal. It's an astounding part of the authentic mystical journey, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I mean, it's the most challenging and the most beautiful at the same time.
Yes.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Gospel of Mary, which I'm sure most people haven't heard of before, and really what your the Magdalene Revolution, what your hope is for it, what you want people to be inspired from out of it. Everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Our guest this hour is Andrew Harvey, author of the book, The Magdalene Revolution. Highly recommend it. And we'll be right back in just a moment.
Are you a spiritual seeker? Are you interested in expanded states of reality? I'm Sam Leibowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will dive into these topics with authors, teachers, researchers, and guides. Tune in at our new time, Wednesdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's the Conscious Consultant Hour, Wednesdays, 12 noon Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Thank you. So before we start again, I see that we do have a comment from loyal listener Bahar on Facebook, who says, in a world that often feels chaotic and overwhelming, this hour brings a sense of calm, clarity, and perspective. Thank you for creating a space that encourages conscious thinking and meaningful reflection. Thank you so much, Bahar, for your very kind words. So, as you mentioned, you did a lot of study into Mary Magdalene, who she was, and writings you could find about her. And you mentioned the Gospel of Mary. I have a sneaking suspicion most people haven't heard of the Gospel of Mary. So what is the Gospel of Mary?
Well, the Gospel of Mary is a Gnostic gospel, and it has the most extraordinary account of Mary giving a teaching that she'd received directly from the cosmic Christ. And it describes her giving this teaching, which is very vast and very extraordinary and shows what a profound mystical adept she is, to a group of very weird and weirded out and jealous disciples. So it sets up perfectly the whole theme of the book, which was that the boys' club couldn't stand who she really was, couldn't stand the intensity and intimacy and completeness of her relationship with Jesus, and couldn't stand that she got to a level of mystical truth and mystical absorption and mystical embodiment that transcended theirs. But that's not the fundamental focus of the book, because that comes from another amazing gospel, which is called the Gospel of the Beloved Companion. And this gospel was translated by a wonderful woman called Jeanne de Cayen, and it was preserved for 1,000 years in secret, 2,000 years in secret, through a succession of different people in France. And she decided to publish it at last in 2010. And she risked tremendous pain and rejection doing so. But what this gospel is even more important than the Gospel of Mary, because it is Mary Magdalene's own gospel. It's written in Alexandrian Greek. She probably wrote it after the resurrection, before she came to France, and where she lived the last part of her life. And it has 6 revelations in it, which are absolutely essential. And if you don't mind, I'd love to read you the passage that I talk about these 6 revelations.
Yes.
The first revelation is that this gospel makes it absolutely clear that the marriage of Cana, which was the place where Jesus did his first miracle, was actually the marriage of Mary Magdalene and himself. She recounts that.
I remember someone pointing out that why would Jesus's mother come to him to say, we're running out of food and wine, to ask him to do something if it wasn't his wedding?
Well, that's true, but there's a deeper significance which I go into at the beginning of the book, which is that Mary, as the embodied divine mother, unleashes Jesus' mystical powers at a marriage, because the deepest significance of Jesus' mission is that he is the incarnation of the sacred marriage. But having it be his marriage makes it even more embodied and amazing. The second revelation in the book is that Jesus did not call himself the Son of God. He called himself and was called by her the Son of Humanity, the Son of Man. So this completely grounds, embodies Jesus as the divine within all of us, not some unique incarnation, a being with a unique message, which was to reveal our unique incarnation of God to ourselves. Third, the Jesus of Mary Magdalene constantly stressed his union with the motherhood of God. They cut all of that out. But her Jesus, the Jesus she knew, refers to God as Father, but also often as Mother, showing the intensity of the depths of the meaning of the sacred marriage to him. And fourth, she describes and the single one they became when they merged together, the Anthropos, what's called the Anthropos in the Gnostic Gospels, which is the being that is born from the marriage of opposites within him or her. Fifth, the Gospels of Beloved Companion confirms modern writings on the Magdalene, and that is that it's Mary Magdalene, not John, who leans tenderly against Jesus' breast at the Last Supper. And it's Mary Magdalene, not John, to whom Jesus from the cross confers the care of his mother, symbolically making Mary Magdalene his sister and mystically revealing her as the daughter of the divine human embodied mother, his own. This completely changes everything. But even more incredibly in this amazing gospel, if you're listening to this, my friends, go out and buy the Gospel of the Beloved Companion and read it. It is a condensed mystical masterpiece by the Magdalene herself. And it ends with this astounding teaching that she gave to the disciples a week after the resurrection, when they were all shattered, fearful, despairing, and she who had seen him came to them and very tenderly not only consoled them and embraced them and said, "Don't worry, it's going to be all right." She gave a unique teaching as a realized, embodied, divine woman. It's an unprecedented teaching on the ascension journey that he transmitted to her a little bit before the resurrection to make her strong enough to go through the crucifixion. And it is an astounding, astounding teaching where she imagines she's given a vision of this great tree of life with seven boughs on it. And she describes the ascension through the tree and the final revelation, which is that she merges with what she calls the White Lady, the Mother of Light, Sophia, or the Eternal Mother, and becomes one with her and is realized as what Jesus says in the teaching as the completion of completion, someone who's fully human and fully divine, just as he is. And this is probably the greatest single teaching of the path to divinization given humanity. It's not just an amazing teaching. It's one of the, to my mind, it's the most extraordinary teaching, and it's especially amazing because it comes from a woman. Most of the great teachings on divinization have come from illumined men, but this teaching has a particular texture, richness, depth, because it comes from the profound depths of the feminine. And that is indispensable, I think, for our future evolution. So it ends my book. My own, what happened after the death of my cat was that I had to finish the book in 2 weeks because of my publishers, and I didn't sleep at all. And I took this teaching, and after what I'd been through, I experienced it at a completely, radically new level and was able, with her help, to give the clearest possible explanation from my own experience and from her guidance of what these different stages were. And it was huge. And it led to the revelation of what she was doing in the cave, because what happened was so extraordinary. Not only did the resurrection of Jesus, because she witnessed it, activate at a wholly new level her own divinization process, she was able to give the most astounding teaching from it a week after. Then she was sent to France, ejected from Israel because of what was going on there after the death of Jesus. And she arrived in France and she started to do miracles and she started to preach in the most extraordinary way. So she became the living female Christ in France. And then she spent the last 30 years of her life in this cave. And what I was able to intuit from what I experienced after my cat died and what I experienced writing this meticulous commentary with no sleep, having just lost lost everything was that in that cave, what she was doing was marrying the resurrection light, this new light that was birthing a new creation to her mind, her heart, her soul, and her body, so that she became the mother of the new creation of the new divine human. That is the true secret of mystical Christianity, and that is now trying to be born everywhere on this earth, because many evolutionary mystics like myself know in the depths of themselves that what we're going through is a global dark night that could potentially, of course, destroy us, but could also potentially resurrect us into the truth of our essential nature, which is that we are one with the one in all of our being, and that this oneness is what the restoration of the Christian Tantra, of the tantric ecstasy between the two and its enormous power, makes possible. So I am completely thrilled that I live to be able to write this journey for people. And you asked me that wonderful question, what do I hope people get from it? Well, I hope for four things, really. The first thing I hope is that people get a very thrilling vision of the entire universe through understanding at the deepest level what the sacred marriage offers. Fundamentally, there is one reality, but it manifests all realities, all manifested realities through this dance of opposites, through Shiva's dance, through Kali's dance. And that is thrilling because it means that the eternal light is behind everything. It's a vast yes. And once you connect with that yes that is behind everything, then an extraordinary hope and energy is born in you. That's the first thing. The second thing that I long for people to get from this book is a true vision of this glorious woman that was so demeaned and degraded, but who represents the feminine in all of its aspects. She had ferocity, she was a warrior, she had infinite powers of endurance, she was tender, she was ecstatic, and she gave herself totally in heart, mind, soul, and body to him, and he gave himself to her, and together they formed and birthed a creative love force that is capable of transfiguring human history. That's the second thing I'd love people to get. The third thing is that I'd love them to get a wholly new vision of Jesus, because Jesus has, of course, had an unbelievably beautiful and holy influence on so many people by the sheer radiance and fearlessness and glory and passion and courage of his personality. But by making him celibate and asexual, they distanced him for us. And by bringing his fullness back, how amazing to have a complete relationship as one person to another person on this road to divinization with Jesus. I'm living in Kashmir, and one of the most extraordinary things about Islam is that it had a sexual prophet. He had wives. He talked about the union between a man and a woman, potentially, I believe, between a man and a man and a woman and a woman, but of course it's conveyed heterosexually, as being one half of the path. And that makes Islam so humane and so grounded in a way that Christianity has never been. But now it can be. And the last thing I would love people to get from this book is a sense of where we need to go now. Because if the sacred marriage is the ultimate vision of yes and the ultimate vision of how reality happens, and it's in all the mystical traditions, they all acknowledge it at one level or another as being the fundamental image of mystical truth. If that's the ultimate truth, then what is happening now? And what's happening now you can see clearly after a while is the demented, dissociated masculine trying to take everything over, to control everything, and failing disastrously and creating situation after situation of massive self-destruction. That is so frightening in one way, but if you have an internal image of the sacred marriage, then you realize that help can be on the way through the return of the sacred feminine in men and women and gay people and straight people and gays and wees, and in our vision of how we do everything, from how we talk to each other, from our to our politics, to our economic policies, to our arts. And that, I believe, is the source of the seeding, the golden seeding of the birth that's trying to take place in this death of an embodied divine humanity. And I know it's true because it's happening in its very beginning, ragged, humbling stages in myself, and I've met it in so many people I know on the earth, Buddhists, Hindus. This great process, this great Kundalini embodiment process is happening now. And I want people to have the great hope that I have from knowing that that's true and knowing that it will take a great deal of suffering for it to be born on the earth, but it can, and I believe now will be born of the earth. And that gives me the strength and the energy and the hope to go on pouring myself out. And I believe that it will give anybody else who puts their plug into the electric socket of the Magdalene Revolution to go on pouring themselves out in what may be very, very dangerous situations, but with great peace, great calm, great patience, great joy, knowing that there is a point in this seemingly terminal atlas.
I have two last questions for you, and we just have a few minutes to finish up. The first being, do you have a sense of why these teachings were hidden for 2,000 years? Like, why did it take this long for them to come out? And the second question is, do you still feel Mary with you?
Well, the first question is very easily answered. To actually release them once the Boys Club had taken over Christianity in Constantine's time risked death. They had to be kept secret. Cathars who kept them secret were horribly persecuted. And to be in her lineage, to keep the teachings alive, actually, and to reveal them could see that you were genocided. So that's the answer for that one. And the second, and the other answer is that humanity wasn't ready. I don't think that humanity has been ready for the full revelation of the Christ consciousness, because the patriarchal structure, the patriarchal sexual world created by the Boys Club was so body-hating, sex-hating, and before the sexual liberation of the last 60, 70 years, human beings were still so totally trapped in that mindset that they couldn't have begun to appreciate the glorious freedom, the children, the liberty of the children of God that was being offered by this vision. And yes, she is, absolutely. How could she not be? I mean, she burnt my life to the ground and resurrected me. What more could I possibly have in terms of intimacy? And I've been, it goes deeper and deeper. It's a very extraordinary experience, but it's honestly, it sounds very grand. I'm not claiming it just for me. I know thousands of people who are having similar amazing experiences of transformation with her. We're all equals. We're all part of this Pentecost. We all bring some unique flavor to it. But I couldn't have written my book without Cynthia Bourgeot's great book, without Annine Vandermeer's great book, the amazing heroic women. And we all recognize each other as carrying a part of the singing a part of the great mass of the return of the Magdalene consciousness.
Beautiful, beautiful. Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show today.
It's always a pleasure, Sam. I love you. I love the work you're doing. I love the seriousness and clarity and passion with which you're doing it. And I just wish you every conceivable joy, and everybody listening, every conceivable joy in the wild days ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. So if people want to learn more about you, learn more about your teachings, about sacred activism,
yes,
where do they go?
AndrewHarvey.net. I'm on YouTube. But the truth is that you learn more about what I'm really about by reading the Magdalene Revolution slowly and taking it into your heart. It's a letter written from my soul to your soul.
Okay.
And I feel that if you do that, then everything that I have ever wanted to communicate to you would be communicated to you.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, Andrew. Again, AndrewHarvey.net. The book, The Magdalene Revolution, highly, highly recommend it. Andrew, thank you so much. I'm wishing you all the joy and profound life that you desire in Kashmir.
Back to you, my friend. Love you. Thank you so much. Bless you.
Thank you. Thank you. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners like Bahar, who tune in every week. Thank you so much for supporting the show and tuning in. Without you, there is no show. And of course, if you did miss any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc, all over social media, on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and on your favorite podcasting platform, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find The Conscious Consultant Hour. Thank you all for tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you all next week. Are you a spiritual seeker? Are you interested in expanded states of reality? I'm Sam Leibowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will dive into these topics with authors, teachers, researchers, and guides. Tune in at our new time, Wednesdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Wednesdays, 12 noon Eastern, on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.